Off the Ball, GAA.
It's a dream that everyone dreams of, to be in Croke Park and especially put up a big performance. You know, I know the occasion can take over a lot of the nerves sometimes and people don't perform the way they want to.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
All right, you're welcome along. It is the Ryan Line. Nathan with you. Still not back to full voice, I notice as I talk. Shane Ryan, how are you?
I'm good. What's that? Still from Mayo.
Still from, yeah. One of my colleagues, also from Mayo, also has no voice. And we were just, sort of half talking to each other as much as we could yesterday, wondering if maybe some Roscommon people, our notorious rivals, had snuck into the nightclub at 4 o'clock the morning we won the All-Ireland and maybe poisoned all the Mayo people with some long lasting effect that they didn't want to hear us.
Right.
So they've created something that has just destroyed our voice. Because I was pointing out yesterday that I had left Mayo a week earlier and still I can't talk.
Yeah. Knowing what I know about Roscommon people, I wouldn't put it past them. I truly wouldn't.
The things you would say about the food at the Open, if you knew Roscommon people, you would, you know, they probably made that food.
that's their work. It does seem like a Roscommon, yeah. Well, I'm sorry. To me, you sound good for what it's worth.
Thanks. Husky. Husky, you know.
Very husky.
It's what people want.
I really like it, Nathan.
Of course, this podcast is your questions for Shane Ryan. You can get them in on the Discord channel, or you can email them, golfweekly@offtheball.com, or you can just send us a message on Instagram, wherever the hell you want. Just get the questions into us. The Beard has been in touch. He's been thinking heavily about this one. Question for Shane. Imagine golf evolved differently. There's no hole. You just have to hit the pin. There's no bunkers. There's no tees. Yeah. There's no drivers. Over to you. What bizarre thing can you come up with that seems perfectly normal to us golfers? Everyone else, please join in. Shane has to outdo us. When I read that question, I thought, that is a perfect Shane Ryan. 5,000 words coming to Golf Digest next week from Shane Ryan on this. I will, because you need to outdo. Not Per Profit responded very late last night. No scorecards. You just keep going until everyone agrees you're finished. No fairways. Every hole is played from the deep rough because that's where the challenge is. Halfway through the round, you swap bags with your playing partner. Yeah. Every hole is a different size golf ball.
Okay.
If you drive more than 300 yards, you have to carry someone else's bag to your ball. Every putt over 6 feet has to be struck while standing on one leg.
I like that one. That's a good one.
I'd say under 6 feet, standing on one leg, could be better. Instead of holes, every green has a small brass bell. You have to hit it with your ball. The bell rings and everyone on the course stops what they're doing to clap.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah, what if it's a game like, did you ever learn about Tlachtli in grade school?
No.
It's this old Aztec game where they play for days and it's just the first person to score, but it's like a ring. It's like a basketball hoop ring that's placed 10 feet above you. However, you cannot use your hands at all. And so basically it's just like people trying to, like, I guess they could kick. But the big thing that I would like to bring to golf is that it was a religious thing. And so the losing team's captain would be beheaded at the end of it. And I think that is what we have to bring into golf. Like if Live Golf were like teams where last place, the captain... there would be still people who do it, right?
Like, wouldn't be out of character. Anyways, go.
No, but like, I mean, it'd be okay. Let's say the deal is okay. You're playing Live Golf, you know, whatever. What they have 12 teams, I think, or whatever they have. You get crazy amounts of money, you know, $15 million or whatever. But the losing captain gets beheaded. They only do it once a year. How many people would still do this? I mean, just for that $15 million, probably no professional golfers at that point, because you'd be like, I don't want any part of this. But I think you would get people out there trying to earn it. That would be the most compelling TV event of the year. I think we have to bring ingredients of Tlachtli to golf. And Live, I mean, Live is struggling right now, so they need a big idea. And I think that's it.
Bryson is injured, but he has turned up regardless. Just in case.
Yeah.
It's a step past my golden rule for the future of golf, which is that you have to lose money, that somebody at some stage it's not just about taking home the bacon. At some stage you got to be financially hit if you don't perform. So I think you're taking it another step.
I love it. The only problem is then it would just be people being sponsored, right? Or it would only be rich people who play. That might not have the effect you want. I'm just cautioning you, Nathan.
Okay.
In case you ever become an emperor, the emperor of golf.
So you're evolving the game of golf is a real death match. Every match is a proper death match.
Yeah, and maybe it's only once a year because you can't just keep replacing losing captains. But I think LIV Golf should be a once a year team tournament. Maybe the bottom two teams out of 12, the winning captain gets beheaded. But, you know, you make a life-changing amount of money. So it's like if you can survive it, you have generational wealth. And I think that's probably where this should go.
Okay. Hello, Ryan Line. I see Shane Lowry is down to 49th in the rankings and on his way out of the top 50. He's 40 next year. Do we need to accept his best days are behind him?
He'll still go 1-1-1 at Adair Manor, but like be carried by Rory McIlroy in a four-ball match, but then hit a 70-foot putt on the 18th hole to win a match. So, no, he's fine. No, yeah. No, he's struggling. I actually do wonder how much the cognizant affected him this year. That was like a very... He seemed very devastated after it. It was obviously a devastating end performance. I mean, the irons he hit were woeful. And so I think that's the kind of thing that can psychologically stick in someone's head. We were actually talking about it yesterday in context of my children and some friends' children, where it's like kids who, when they were 8 years old or when they were 6 years old, were diving off a diving board, and now they're nine and they're scared of it. It's like the idea that life puts fear into you, right? Like, and golfers have talked about that. I think Jim Furyk had a great quote about it, where basically it's like you're at your most clutch when you're 23 or 24. And then as you learn what can happen, it sort of becomes harder and harder because the sort of reality sets in on you. And I wonder if that sort of happened to Lowry. We'll see. He's certainly good enough to come out of it. But I do wonder if that kind of was one of those foundational moments where it was just like, oh God, I completely choked under pressure. Now it's in my head, and now he's not playing good golf. I just reread a story about Tony Jacklin losing the, oh God, I want to say 71 Open to Trevino, when Trevino just like chipped in over and over. And they were on the 17th hole. Jacklin was up by one and was on the green in two. And Trevino was over the back of the green in three. And Trevino walking up the fairway was like, good job, Choney, you've won, you've done it, which is such a dick move, but it's like one of those funny things. Then he chips in, and Jacklin was so upset that he three-putted and then lost it on the 18th hole. And there's a story by James Corrigan in the Telegraph where Jacklin's talking about it, and it's very open, saying, it ruined me for major championships, which is all I cared about. Like, I knew in that moment, like, you know, Nicklaus came up to him, Palmer came up to him after, and we're like, listen, don't sweat it, these things happen. But he's like, that was it for me. And I knew it was it for me. I could never compete at a major again. So maybe something like that happened to Lowry. Maybe that's more dramatic than what will actually happen. But yeah, he's not had a good year, that's for sure.
It is remarkable the effect it's had on him. So he hasn't had a single top 20 since the Cognizant. Mm. Straight away, post that, missed the cut at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, missed the cut at the Players. And ever since then, he's had a lot of sort of top 20, top 30, top 40 appearances, a couple of missed cuts in there at the Scottish Open, at the US Open. And I, listen, he's always had a level of inconsistency, which is probably where I think the, I won't even say the Irish, I would say the European analysts and the American analysts slightly differ in that. I think you look at Shane Lowry's career and probably go, well, he's had a sort of Brian Harman-esque career. Mm. And we're like, he is this European legend, one of the greats of our era. And you're like, well, the numbers don't necessarily back it up. And a lot of it would have always been, well, the thing with Shane is he can just turn it on. He just needs to get into contention. And he has these runs of inconsistency, but then suddenly he'll rock up and he wins an Open, he wins a World Golf Championship, he's won an Irish Open as an amateur. You know, he's won events. And I do wonder for the Cognizant that it was so galling. Like, it was, whoa, whatever about the first time, but backing it up straight away with another double and going in the water, you're like, whoa, the head. What effect that's had on him of, again, going, okay, I don't get into contention that often, but generally when I do, I stick around.
Right,
and this time, I'm lifting, you know, as he said himself, he's imagining his daughter running onto the green. Like, he's completely got ahead of himself. And it, what that has done to his own confidence of, oh shit, even when I'm getting in the mix, I couldn't get it done. I don't get in the mix as often as I should.
Right.
The greater part to all that is, and it is a, I'm not sure who sent in the question, it's myself and Shane know this. You know, he's 40 next year. Do we need to accept his best days are behind him? Yes.
Well,
yes,
yeah,
yes, we do. He's 40 yeah. next year. Like, we're,
I know.
Shane, we're in that sphere at the moment. We're doing that thing. Oh, life's never been better in my 40s. Like, I just don't care what people think anymore. I just live my own life. You know, I'm not trying to impress anybody. It's all bullshit.
Yeah.
Life was better in our 20s. At our 30s.
You know, I disagree with you a little bit. I do think there is something about the not caring that comes with your 30s and 40s. I do think this is the prime. I think once we hit 50, we're done. You might as well just put a bullet in us. But for now, I feel like I'm riding pretty high. Okay. I like it. I was the anxious 20-something, I think I would say. I don't miss my 20s. But if I were a professional golfer and was clutch in my 20s and then now I'm like a scared guy, then I would miss it.
Now, you see, I'm speaking from recent experience where I went out 10 days ago and I still can't talk.
Yes, no, that's different. Well, that's the thing. You have to
Whereas
come
in my 20s,
with,
I would probably still be in mail.
No, if you're somebody who's like, your life depends on like drinking and having fun, you got to get over that because you pay such a heavy price.
My best days are behind me when it comes to that.
Yeah, no, but I'm like okay with that. But yeah, if you're not okay with that, yeah, then it sucks to get old.
Yeah.
Then it does.
Like Shane isn't not playing this week and he could do with playing just in terms of FedEx, but he obviously made the comment at the Open of nobody cares if I finish 75th in the FedEx in 20 years' time, nobody's going to talk about that. And again, he is, I do wonder if hanging around with Rory is impacting his thought process and that sort of stuff of, well, actually, I have loads of money. I have a really good life. I get a bit of a break. Now, he's going to play a lot in Europe, obviously, over the course of the winter. I don't want to be going and playing in the Wyndham and all this nonsense. If I make the FedEx good and well, I'll turn up next week and, you know, but it's not motivating me right now. And maybe in 20 years, he comes to regret that and this is still something of his peak. But I think he's like a lot of these guys are going to be in their late 30s. They'll pick and choose where they play. They have enough money to be set up for life. And also, maybe it gives him a level of longevity because he's not burning himself out chasing everything at 39 that actually he knows, like he's going to be playing at the Open till he's 60. So he's got another 21 Open championships.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you got to still think he'll win another tournament at some stage.
Yeah, and I will say, like, on one hand, it would be shocking if he dropped out of the playoffs. He's 60th. That shouldn't happen. He should be just fine to make the top 70. However, he is in that cutoff of signature events, and that's a bigger deal, especially if he has ambitions to be in the championship series in 2028. You've got, like, next year is going to be so crucial for a lot of people. So, you know, I think that, 51 through 60 get into a couple, the first two signature events, but the top 50 get into all of them, I think. And so that's kind of one thing to think about. But yeah, you know, it's interesting with Lowry too, where, look, we just saw, first of all, he's had two, you know, good Ryder Cups with some unbelievable moments. We just saw Luke Donald name Patty Harrington to as a vice captain because the Ryder Cup is in Ireland. So there will be all this momentum to have an Irish player. But I do think with players, they're going to be kind of ruthless. Like I think he does have to go out and earn it to some extent.
I disagree. I think Shane Lowry has to do very little to get on that Ryder Cup team. We saw the last time. I know it was the way it worked out with the European team, 11 of the 12, and it won't be the case this time, but I still think he will stick as close as possible. He has a very tight bond with a lot of the players, arguably too tight.
Right.
We also think Europe are going to win because it's in Europe and they generally seem to win Ryder Cups these days. But you're right. Yeah. Obviously, all the momentum is going to be that Shane Lowry should be on the team. It's in a Adair manner. He knows the course like the back of his hand. I saw on his Instagram, he was down there last week. He spends a lot of time there.
Yeah.
The Ryder Cup is bigger than just the golfers, and you need to have Shane Lowry there. I think I think if he's, unless we're sitting here in a year's time and he hasn't had a top 20, Lowry needs to be, if Lowry's in the top 15 top 20 on the points rankings, I think he gets in.
Yeah, I just think they're not going to... I think they will be ruthless enough that he's got to do something. He can't just be... He can't have no top 20s next year, for example, right? I mean, there's got to be some sign of form because there's just more... I don't know. Like, there is a phenomenon. You compared him to Brian Harman where it's like they might have had similar careers or, you know, maybe he's better than Harman or whatever, but... Lowry is on Ryder Cup teams because it's Europe, right? Like, Brian Harman has made one U.S. Ryder Cup team, and that was because he won a major. It's harder to make an American team. So there is that phenomenon of, okay, maybe the well's not as deep in Europe and he has a better chance, but I do think there's just so many good players around now and so many coming up. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, it's. I think you're probably right. You're probably right that it's worth it to have them team for the chemistry he has, all the players and the fans and all that kind of stuff. But he can't do nothing. He can't just be on a down.
No, I think you're right. But I think he has to do less than most to get
100%
there.
100% agree.
Hi, Shane. Saw a stat from DataGolf on how many starts contribute to 50% of a player's career world ranking points. I went looking for this on my phone. Basically, who achieved the most with no consistency? Is what they're reading into it. And I think it's, from looking at it, I think isn't far off. Unsurprisingly, Todd Hamilton tops the list. Do you think the money in the game will make this more common, less pressure to achieve consistency?
No, because I think that's sort of misreading what a professional golfer is. I think these people have spent their entire lives trying to be good at this game. I don't think they win one time and go, okay, that's it. Well, I guess LIV Golf might be, everybody who's signed with LIV Golf might be the counter argument there. But no, I don't think people are going to try to be inconsistent or anything like that. I think they're, I think especially the really great players, they just want to continue being great. You know, I mean, Scottie Scheffler seems very motivated to me. You know, Rory, to most degrees, seems very motivated to me. And so on a lower level, they're all going to be motivated. You are going to have a fluke win, but it's not like Todd Hamilton was like, okay, I won my one tournament. I won my fluke. Now I want to disappear forever. I just don't think that's kind of what most professional golfers are like. They have the will and the ambition and the work ethic to get where they are. And, you know, they're going to do everything they can to stay there. Jackson Koivun's a good example maybe of a guy who, I don't know. I just think certain guys, most guys, when they start winning, they want to keep winning. I mean, I think that feeling, you just want to duplicate it. And how many times have we seen people sort of be heartbroken where you look at it and go, okay, wait, you won professional golf tournaments, you're a millionaire, and yet you're down in the dumps a year later because your game is so bad. I just think that's not how these guys operate.
So Todd Hamilton, this was off the fact that Davis Riley was contending for quite a while last week, and Davis Riley quite often props up the entire leaderboard on the PGA Tour, and then does that thing of once or twice a year, rocks up, wins a tournament, keeps his card, does all the good stuff. And Todd Hamilton earned 77 points in his career, world ranking points, 39 of them, so half of them came from the Open and the Honda Classic, his two wins,
yeah.
Second on the list is Craig Perks. Then you have a couple of newer players. Chris Goddard up and Christopher Raytown, but that'll obviously change because they're just starting out. Then Matt Wolf again, which would make a certain amount of sense. He sort of burst onto the scene, did nothing afterwards. Obviously, he's been gone to LIV. Then you have Davis Riley, Jacob Bridgman, Ryan Gerrard are sort of the newer crop as well. That'll change. Nota Begay.
That makes sense.
What does he have? Three wins?
I thought he had, at least three. I mean... The joke about him is like, oh, he was Tiger's friend, right? I mean, like, that was his whole thing. But he did have a very successful couple of years. Let's see. No, he's got five. Four PGA Tour wins, and he won something else. But, yeah, he's got five. They were all between 99 and 2000, so it was all that one period.
Todd Hamilton, you don't hear him mentioned as much now because it's well over 20 years ago at this stage, but players would often be, you know, who would come from nowhere to win would be sort of put into a category with Todd Hamilton, so Ben Curtis or Wai Yang. Definitely unfair in a Ben Curtis. Ben Curtis play Ryder Cup?
Let's see. I got that right up right here. I can tell you. Ben Curtis played in the 2008 Ryder Cup, which America won. He went 1-1-1. Yeah. Yeah, he played a Ryder Cup.
But is Todd Hamilton out on his own as a this should never have happened?
I'm having a brain fart here. Who's the New Zealand guy who won the
Ryan Fox? Ryan Fox.
Who won the PGA? Mike something.
Michael Campbell.
Come on, help
Michael
me out.
Campbell. Michael Campbell.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So like maybe him a little bit. Trying to think who the other.
I don't know if you can have Michael Campbell. We had Michael Campbell on the show last year, actually. He was playing down at the seniors event. You see, you're looking at Michael Campbell from a typically American-centric viewpoint and ignoring the fact that Michael Campbell won 7 times on the European Tour when the European Tour was a big old deal, won the Irish Open in 2003.
Oh, wow. Cool.
He is no amazing. Todd Hamilton.
Amazing. By the way, did you notice I'm wearing, I got this in the mail yesterday and I don't even know who sent it, but this is like American President's Cup gear, apparently. I think it's like the shirt that they'll have at the President's Cup. It just came in a box. It's a very nice shirt. But because you so thoroughly got me going on Gaelic football last week, I thought maybe I would bring the President's Cup fever to Ireland to get people psyched. And I think, you know, Europe is unclaimed fan territory. In the President's Cup. So I would like all the Irish to root for America. I think there's no better time politically, globally, for people to get on board with the American thing. So this is why I'm wearing this shirt. Nobody's paying me for it.
The problem we have with the President's Cup is it's very hard to get back behind Team International.
team rest of the world except Europe.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There's nothing I love more seeing than Corey Connors and Hideki Matsuyama teaming up of a Friday morning. That gets the blood racing, yeah. Doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, look, I guess the truth is if Europeans were ever going to get into it, it would be to root against America. But I think it'd be funny if I can somehow influence Ireland to become American fans.
I guess, only for the what, yeah. And maybe this is a question, maybe we'll think about this, or you can comment on the Discord channel. And I don't know if we've touched on this before. I'm not going to use the line the worst major winner because they've won a major championship. Mm-hmm. But at what point, if we call it like the Stricker barometer, right?
Right.
At what point of winning a major plus other career would Steve Stricker swap or not swap with you? So Steve Stricker is not going to swap his career with Todd Hamilton, even though Todd Hamilton is a major. Am I right or am I wrong?
So first of all, can I just say, I meant Sean McKeel. I didn't mean Michael Campbell, to be fair.
Sean McKeel is not from New Zealand, we should point out. One of your own.
No, I know. So maybe Michael Campbell I kind of meant, but I more meant Sean McKeel. So wait, you're asking when would Stricker swap with you? Because Stricker had a pretty good career with a lot of PGA Tour wins. My favorite trivia about Stricker is he won Comeback Player of the Year straight years.
Yes.
No, not just twice. Two years straight years. Yeah, which is the craziest thing.
So anyway, he won 12 times on the PGA Tour. He won the World Match Play. He won playoff events. He won the Memorial. He won the Tournament Champions, the John Deere Classic 3 times. And he's obviously gone on and had a very good seniors career as well. But never won a major championship. So what level? So he's not swapping with Todd Hamilton.
No. Well, I don't know. I guess that it might be different with each player where you go, okay, maybe winning a major is so much more important that they would do it. You know, you just don't know. Here's the thing. Like, what about some guy who won the match? You know, what about Mike Weir or somebody who, Danny Willett, who's like a fluke Masters winner or seen as a fluke Masters winner? You get to go every year to that. You get to go to the dinner. It's like such a status thing. It's always on your resume forever. Would you give up, your 12 PGA Tour wins for that? Problem is, with Stricker, you know, look, it was part circumstance that got him to be Ryder Cup captain because it happened to be in Wisconsin that year where he's from. But his longevity and consistency let him get into that position. You know, I don't know. I think maybe this is a tough one. I think Stricker would not switch with a Todd Hamilton or a Mike Weir. That's just my guess, though. But you just can't ignore how important
Would he swap with a Martin Keimer?
Right. Well, yeah, so you've won a Players, you've won a U.S. Open.
You've won two majors.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, fuck. I forgot about his first major. Pinehurst was very much in my head. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess the bigger question is, we can't look into Steve Stricker's head. Would you, if you were Steve Stricker, swap for a Martin Keimer career?
Yeah. I suppose, you're into then, if you were doing a, and we'll save this for another episode, you know, your 100 greatest golfers of all time, who comes right. higher on the list, Martin Keimer or Steve Stricker? But you're right.
Yeah.
You're touching on the romantic side of it there as well, which is all of the benefits that come with being a major champion. Now, Martin right. Keimer obviously won the worst two, the US Open and the PGA. So no great
let's
perks.
Let's go easy on the US Open there.
No great perks to either of them. Martin Keimer, I don't know. Steve, who you having? Steve Stricker or Martin Keimer? Better career.
Well, it's gotta be Keimer, hasn't it? Again, Martin Keimer won 23 times as a professional. Mm. His only PGA Tour wins are the Players in his two majors, but he won a bunch on the Euro Tour. Now, Stricker's won 41 times, but that counts a bunch of senior events. On the PGA Tour, he won 12 times, and he won two playoff events, and he won the match play. So those would have been his biggest events. Didn't win a Players, didn't win a major. I think you would say that overall, Stricker probably had the better career.
No, I was just about to say, no chance. No, we're not counting senior stuff.
That's what I'm saying. Don't count it. That's fine.
So, two majors and the Players. So he's won.
No, you're right.
So, but then also, he's won. You look at the type of tournaments he's won. So he's won Scottish Open. He's won in Abu Dhabi. He's won the Dunhill Links. He's won a World Golf Championship in China, I assume it was, the HSBC back in the time. Like, he's won a lot of different types of golf courses all over the world. Martin Keimer.
Stricker.
Ahead of Steve Stricker.
Well, Stricker won three straight John Deere's, so. you're right. No, first of all, Keimer arguably had a better career, but the bigger question of whose career would you take is like Keimer 800% of the time. Stricker might have some sort of backdoor argument that based on like his world ranking and stuff, that he was more consistent over time, not just in tournaments he won, but just an overall career. You take Keimer's two majors, the Players, Ryder Cup stuff, even like it's, yeah.
All right. The Stricker barometer is one I'm going to come back to quite a lot now in terms of ranking golfers. Question for Shane. Since Shane is so annoyed by the food at the Open, I'm wondering, what's the best tournament to cover as a reporter?
Well, so in terms of food, the US Open is the best that there's ever been. It's unbelievable. They're great. They ply you with treats. There's like, they'll bring in like, first of all, the food's just really good, but then they'll bring in like, fresh squeezed lemonade stand all of a sudden is in the media room. Some company they just hire on to come do fresh squeezed lemonade, or like now all of a sudden we've got Chipotle in the media room. They're great. It's a food paradise for a media member. I'm trying to think back in the day when I covered a lot of PGA Tour events, the Byron Nelson in Texas was amazing. They really take pride in their catering and everything, so they always had great food. Most stops would either be like mediocre to bad on the PGA Tour. The Players is pretty good. Players has a really good breakfast. PGA food is okay. US Open is amazing. Masters, I haven't been in a while, but the Masters, as you'd imagine, is like unbelievable. I would say that's my thing. But okay, in terms of covering beyond food,
Is there anything else?
What's the best tournament to cover? That's a good question. I talked before about how I don't like how in the Masters you can't get inside the ropes. In previous years, honestly, the Open has been some of the most fun for me because you're at a new place. Like, you're kind of in a new country, which is great. And the courses are beautiful and all that. This past year was sort of unpleasant for a few reasons that had very little to do with the golf. But I think I would say like the best tournament to cover, if you only gave me one, I'd probably do the US Open every year.
Okay. Hey lads, can Shane explain how Liv expects to survive under new investment when several billion from the Saudis couldn't make it work?
Yeah, you got me. You truly got me. I think the big thing you're hearing now is that the money might be coming from GSE, which is Bryson's agency. But it'll be one of those deals where it's like a, you know, they give them enough money and then they're the first creditors to get paid back when they make money. So they give them sort of like this bridge loan where it's, you know, it's good for their players because they represent a lot of players, not just Bryson. They, you know, Neiman's with them. There's a couple others. So it keeps that going for them, which they might want, which Bryson obviously wants. Bryson becomes the majority equity holder. But even then, it's like you need more investors at that point, unless like a GSE is not going to put $1 billion a year into this thing to keep going. And it just doesn't make sense to me, because in order for LIV to be what it is, even on the level it is today, which you could argue is a big failure, even for that, you've got to keep signing players, right? You've got to keep this thing going. You can't just be like, okay, well, now we'll just lose Rom when his contract's over. We'll lose everybody when their contract's over, but we'll just keep going. It's like, what is even the point at that point? How are you ever going to make money? How is anybody going to care about this? So I don't know. It's like I joked yesterday on Twitter that it's kind of like a spite league at this point. It's just like, oh, you think we're gonna shut down? Well, guess what? We're going to keep going no matter what, no matter what it looks like. So I think it's crazy. And I don't have any idea, you know, who they get to invest or why. So we'll see. It just seems like, you know, when that report first came out a week ago that, oh, they've got this investor, it's going to be fine. I was like, oh, they're just kind of planting that. I think they're kind of planting that in the news to try to, you know, encourage people to invest or make it seem like they're more wanted than they are. But now it seems true if you believe Scott O'Neill yesterday, which I think it would be weird for him to get up there and just lie. So I do believe it. It just doesn't make sense, and I can't see it making sense. So I continue to believe that they are on the downswing, and it's the ride is almost over. And I don't really know why they're hanging on. I don't get it.
Well, it's interesting there that you say it's the agency behind Bryson and several of the top players. And obviously, I'm assuming that is the same agency that put all sorts of noses out of joint at the start of LIV that were aggressively pushing people towards it. Yeah. It's obviously very much in their interest to try and somehow keep this alive, because they have signed their players' lives over to LIV, banked on it being this enormous success, and to somehow try and prove that it can be a little success and maybe bring some money in. Because again, a lot of their clients, while Bryson will have options and Joaquin Neiman might have options, I'd imagine a lot of their clients will have very few options if LIV goes to the wall.
Right. Yeah, and that's probably part of it. Which, you know, but it's still going to be driven by Bryson. I think Bryson really doesn't want to come back to the PGA Tour. And I think that's probably, you know, if this does happen, I think that's probably the biggest engine of all. I think probably they would be, you know, if Bryson was like, I'm done with this, I think they would probably be somewhat ruthless and just going, well, tough luck for the other guys.
It's interesting with the couple of weeks we've had on the PGA Tour and the emergence of Jackson Koivun very quickly as somebody who looks like he's going to be the next superstar.
Yeah.
2 years ago, the conversation would have been, what are LIV going to try and pay to bring this guy over? Whereas now, it's not even a talking point.
Yeah, and how rotten would that be if Koivun went to LIV? That would be so disappointing. So, yeah, well, we'll see. I don't really have many answers beyond that, but it's an interesting little thought experiment to try to untangle in your mind how they would ever make this work.
And the conversation online is such and has been obviously the whole way through a reflection of the general online discourse, particularly in America at the moment, where even over the last couple of days, and I see Arlo White is going, what a very interesting day, guys. And LIV and the LIV bots essentially, haha, you said we were dead. You said it was gone and we're still here. And it's like, yeah, but you're not. Your whole point was you left because you were wealthy beyond your means and you'd never have to work again. And now you're like begging someone to come in and maybe give you another tournament or two.
For what? You're still like, the best case scenario is you continue as you are now, where nobody likes it or watches it. Like, this is very, I don't know. I think it's such a weird thing to invest your identity in, being like a LIV guy.
We got one more question in. Shane, another Shane here. What are your thoughts on the state of the women's game? Really enjoyed the final round of the Women's Open, but felt very flat. Not a massive crowd, ?
Yeah, there's no buzz behind it, and there hasn't been for years. I don't know how better to say that or to pretend otherwise. It's just not buzzy. It's not, nobody cares. And I don't know what changes that. I don't know why it is, right? Compared to, let's say, women's basketball or women's tennis. I don't know, or women's soccer during the World Cup. I don't know why it doesn't seem to catch on. I mean, people have all kinds of theories where it's like, oh, Nelly Cord is not charismatic enough. You don't have that one shining figure. Another common thing in America, and I'm just saying this, and I don't endorse it, but a common thing in America is that you have too many stars from Asia and people don't really like that or care about it. Or you know what I mean? It doesn't resonate with an American or European audience. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. It's another thing people say. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, why it doesn't catch on.
Maybe you just...
It just feels stagnant to me. That's all I can say.
You, and you know better, particularly with an American audience, you've just spoken about basketball and tennis there. Like, mm-hmm. Golf, we're constantly talking about in some ways, I wouldn't describe it as a niche sport, but we're out, yeah. You know, in the men's side of things, which is an absolute behemoth, we're constantly talking about the lack of interest outside of certain periods of the year. Is it that the interest in golf is sort of so thin that there's just not enough to go around? Like, even at the very top of the game, you're struggling to get people fully invested every Sunday, that there's just not enough interest there to spread it out then to, well, actually, the women's game. Whereas in football, there's so, like, it's the most popular sport in the world. So people have enough time, and there's enough people to fill stadiums and sell things out. And again, in Scotland, well, sorry, it was in Lytham and St. Anne's last week, but again, you know, they've just had the Open a few weeks ago. You know, do they need to look at having it in different parts of the country, at very different parts of the country at different times? And you're right, it probably is missing, maybe Nelly Cord is the biggest superstar you're ever going to get in the game. It is,
right.
There's no great, if Nelly Cord wins the first three majors of the year, maybe everyone gets on board, but then you're kind of going, why is there five majors?
Which ones are
she's
they?
Completed the Grand Slam, but I thought she's only won four of them. Yeah, we don't include that one in that thing that we do.
I think you're right, and I think, you know, I think you're absolutely right about other sports having these like big huge global audiences. You know, Caitlin Clark's such an interesting example in basketball, because I think everybody wants there to be a Caitlin Clark in every sport. But like basketball is such a flashy game, you know, so is soccer. You have such room for individual brilliance where it's like, no matter how good you are in golf, you're just standing there hitting a ball. And so you have a niche audience. And then the tennis would be the obvious comparison point, but tennis has the benefit of the tournaments go on at the same time, right? So the men and women are competing at the same exact time at Wimbledon. And so you kind of have, you know, the audience is sort of there for both of them, and you, it's just an easier like crossover. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about women's golf or what the answer is or anything, but it just does feel like this riddle of how to get people to care, how to get it to have a moment, as people would say, to have a moment. You just, it's sort of like, I don't know. I don't know how to solve that riddle.
And listen, maybe this is, basketball is an example of where it can happen. I'd assume part of the issue as well is that, as we've mentioned previously, the amount of journalists, the amount of media covering golf is shrinking constantly. And that resources are incredibly tight, that it's not a case of, okay, the women's game is investing and we now as a media company need to go and invest significantly in this. They're like, well, we're cutting back everywhere. And the last thing we're going to cut back on is the men's game, because that's the bit that's bringing in most of the money at the moment. So therefore, I can't imagine Golf Digest had five journalists over at the Women's Open last week.
No, definitely not. It's another great point. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
And it's a never-ending cycle then, because it's not everywhere. It's not in all the news. Yeah, it's not being covered in the same way.
Well, it's like, what is the biggest story? What's crazy, what is the biggest story this year in women's golf? I think, as much as you want to talk about Korda or you winning the two majors, I think it's Charlie Hall pranking her caddy. I think that had the most, like, cultural resonance. That lotto ticket thing was like the biggest thing, and so that kind of gives you a sense of like where things are at right now.
Where do you stand on the Charlie Hull caddy prank?
That's terrible. I mean, like, look, I'm just not a fan of, and again, I don't know the dynamic between her and her caddy, so I leave room for the fact that the caddy, this is his sense of humor, he thinks it's the funniest thing in the world, but I really don't like any prank. Let's divorce it from golf, divorce it from anything. Any prank where you're dangling something that somebody really wants in front of their face and then ripping it away. So in other words, Nathan, if you were like, I don't know, what if there was a promotion you were going after or some award that you cared about winning? If a friend of yours was like sent you an email being like, congratulations, Nathan, you've won this award, and you're over the moon, ecstatic, and then he's like, oh, ha ha, it's a prank. I'm like, what are you doing? That's like the worst thing. And in this case, it's even worse because there's that economic factor to it where it's like, you know, for this guy, we would have to assume $100,000 would be a really big deal. 100,000 pounds would be a big deal. And it's made uglier by the fact that Charlie Hull is rich and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I didn't like it. I just didn't like it spiritually or like vibes wise. And then the other funny thing is just like her being like, well, he thought it was hilarious. It's like, yeah, but, you know, we don't know for sure what he's thinking because his job depends on him sort of saying it's hilarious. Like, if he came out and was like, this is awful and she's a bad person for doing this to me, congratulations, you're out of a job, you know? So I thought it was just an ugly situation all around, and I just thought she looked terrible for it.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I didn't get the, if you didn't find it funny, you don't have a sense of humor.
Oh, give me a break.
A lot of the comments I saw were, oh, her caddy's loaded. It's not going to make... I'm like, sorry, you clearly don't understand the life of a caddy, even with a very, very top player like Charlie Hull, as to how much money. And I think you've nailed it there, the bit of, if you had pulled a prank like that on me, obviously your go-to is, I do have a sense of humor. Ha ha.
Right,
but,
yeah.
And you might show, you'd be a little bit pissed off, but eventually you're going to have to kind of laugh along and go, oh, you got me. But... You know,
I would, if somebody did that to me, that would be it. Like that would, the friendship would be over. I'm like, don't do that.
And it's the weird dynamic. You know? It feels very 20 years ago, how you treat your caddy, caddies have tried to do so much to guess all sorts of different. It's like, no, we're not the punch bag here.
Well, and the other thing about it is it's like, I can see, okay, you go into a gift store. We have Spencer's Gifts here, whatever. I can see going in and going, oh, how funny would this be? And not really thinking about it enough and then doing it because you're kind of dumb or whatever. But then after, it's just like, you still have a chance after to go, you know what? I didn't think about how this would play out. I am so sorry. I just screwed up. I thought it would be a funny joke, but obviously it's bad. Obviously it's like people are going to think I'm a jerk and all I can do is apologize, right? Instead of this, like the thing she did, the weird doubling down where it's just like, oh, you're just an idiot. You're just kind of stupid.
We never hit record on this podcast, Shane. I'm joking, Shane.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You got me. But see that? Look, but Nathan, that's funny, okay? That's funny because I, earlier this year, to a colleague who wanted to win some GWAA awards, my friend and I made up a whole fake GWAA email where all like the people he would have not wanted to win the awards had won them and he didn't win anything. And we sent that and he went off in a rage and he was going crazy. But it was like the bad that we put the bad thing forward and then pulled it back. And it's funny for everyone. Yes. And he went on to win a couple awards.
Okay.
Right? So that's what you do. That's, you put the bad thing forward, even though that's kind of annoying too. I actually don't really like that, but it's miles better than putting the good thing forward and yanking it away.
All right, we are done with this week's Rhineline. Get your questions in, as always, on the Discord or email or wherever the hell you want. If you meet Shane on the street in the mean streets of one of the Carolinas, you just go up and ask him a question and he will answer it for you.
Either Carolina, I'll be there. Just go up the streets.
He's around. All right, Shane, thank you as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, Nathan.